Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump's peace plan claims victory and closure. This is an illusion. There is no victory, and the root causes are not being addressed. If anything, this is merely a pause. Stated differently, the Trump plan has no political solution to bring peace. Crosstalking the illusion of peace, I'm joined by my guest, Dr. Kami in London. She is a Palestinian physician, writer, and political activist. And in Brussels, we cross to Elijah Magnier. He is a veteran war correspondent and political analyst. Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Doctor, if I can go to you first in London, as a long-term observer and personally attached to this story in Palestine and obviously the recent catastrophe that we've all witnessed on our phones and elsewhere, how would you sum up this kind of victory lap that Trump and all of his supporters and, of course, the Israelis, or at least many of them, are exhibiting in the wake of this so-called ceasefire, which is being violated as we speak? Go ahead, doctor.
Well, look, the first thing that's wrong with it is the fact that it was drawn up without Palestinian participation. So already you know, before you even look at the detail, already you know that this cannot be right. You cannot draw up a plan for the management and the future of a Palestinian territory in which the inhabitants are Palestinians, and you don't involve them at all. So, you know, having said that, almost we could pack up and go home as from now. But if we were to go more into it, we would see that it is vague. It has no enforcement mechanism at all. We don't know who is going to police it. Its outlines are, as I say, vague, and they don't really address the fundamental issue, which nobody is willing to confront, which I very much hope we will talk about during this program, which is the very existence of the State of Israel. This is what needs to be being questioned. Not these details and this play acting and this show that Trump has put on. And you know, watching him in this Tel Aviv love-in, whatever, you know, how one can describe it.
No, it was a Las Vegas show. That's what it was, okay? That's all it was, okay? And thanking his donors, which is really quite extraordinary. And you know, speaking of his speech, if I can stay with you, doctor, at one time, not too long ago, there was policy of the United States to support a two-state solution. That was not in his speech whatsoever. So we see the Israelization or Zionization of American foreign policy. Go ahead.
Yes, and it goes together with the Zionization of the American public. There are signs, they're very promising and encouraging that this is beginning to change. But the majority of American citizens remain wedded to the idea of Israel. And of course, you know...
Well, doctor, I disagree with you. I mean, recent public opinions polls, I mean, across the board, of course, if we use the American context, the Democratic Party, the Israelis have lost the Democratic Party, particularly its youth. And even in the Republican Party, the younger men in the MAGA movement, they have all turned away. I'm sure you're aware of the incident of the assassination of Charlie Kirk. It's not rosy. It's not rosy for the Zionist message in the United States right now. And I want to talk about if that's going to be reversed. Go ahead.
Yeah, listen, I fully acknowledge what you say. I understand that things are changing and they are promising, as I tried to say. However, one must not forget that the Zionization of the American public goes very, very deep.
I know.
It will be difficult to get the American, the ordinary American people to give up on Israel, frankly. And what we need, you see, I'm measuring this against the aim that we should have. The aim should be that the state of Israel was a criminal mistake undertaken on the part of Western leaders at a particular juncture in history. They thought that it would serve their ends. In fact, it has turned out to be, I'm not going to mince my words, this is a monster. This is a monster that's been created.
Well, it has certainly made a mockery of so-called Western values. Elijah, let me go to you in Brussels here. You know, the doctor enumerated many of the problems, and there are many, many more. And she used the word criminal, and all of a sudden I thought of Tony Blair. We can talk about him as well. But, I mean, there is no mechanism here. It's the will of one man. That's what it sounds like. I mean, if this is going to work, and unfortunately, to both my guests and to my viewers, it's the only game in town right now, okay, for the time being. So, and it all hinges on him. Should we be worried? Go ahead, Elijah.
I don't think we should not be worried at any moment for a simple reason. It is impossible to call a peace deal with an occupier and an occupied population. You can't have a peace deal when you are an occupier and when you bring the most powerful president of the most powerful country in the world only to impose a cessation of hostilities with 20 obscure points, without a timetable, without a vision for the future, with no Palestinian ruling themselves, ignoring self-determination, ignoring completely, but not only not recognizing a state for the Palestinians. How can we talk about a peace deal when in the United Nations, the Palestinians, as every other population in the world, has the right to self-determination? And if a Palestinian citizen say, I want to live in a state of mind, that is his full right. And the President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, it's a fugitive of the International Criminal Court, are denying that for the Palestinian people. So no, there is no deal. Is a total illusion. However, we have only the killing that has stopped. People are still not eating well. The number of trucks are extremely reduced. Now, in my experience, I've covered more than 15 wars. People will start waking up, not because of their safety, because that is something they put behind. They're no longer dying from bombs, but they can die from other diseases. They have no shelter, no food, nothing to fall back to, and they will start getting back to kind of a normality to realize the last 2 years what they have been going through. It is, they have been demonized and they do not live in any human condition.
Well, this is not and that it was by design. That's what this whole operation was to do. Destroy the livelihood and eventually force the Palestinians from the land. Doctor, was this plan designed to fail? I mean, look, we've been talking for like 16 minutes now, and there's no ray of light in this. I mean, so it's a serious question. Was it designed to fail?
No, I don't think it was designed at all, except
That's a good point. Not even designed. Okay, I got you. Good.
No, but except as a vehicle for Donald Trump, for him to appear before the world as a man who's able to solve what had been impossible to solve, that is the problem between Israel and the Palestinians. That's really what it was aimed at. I can't take it seriously because as my colleague said in from Brussels, it does not address any of the issues that really that are fundamental to this problem. And you know, I very much want the discussion to focus on Israel, because the problem we have really is related to Israeli conduct, Israeli behavior. And that is dictated by impunity. I don't think historically it's possible to point to a similar example of a small state which enjoys such impunity. We know that the United States does, and Western powerful Western nations do to a certain extent, but this small state in the Middle East enjoys amazing impunity. And I found myself marveling at the position that Israel finds itself in. It can kill, it can deny aid, it can
Doctor, I agree with you, but that's all part and parcel of the Zionist project. So if you frame it that way, I understand why they're doing it. It's why the West accepts it. That's what I find more puzzling.
Exactly, and I very much want to move on to that. What is going on here? Because you can't have impunity in a vacuum. Israel has impunity because it is allowed to have impunity by powerful Western forces. Question is, why is that? Why is Israel apparently so important that it can behave in this completely psychopathic and monstrous way towards the Palestinians? The other point we need also not to forget is that Israel's aim has never changed.
That's right.
Israel's aim is to empty the land of Palestine, of its inhabitants, and take their place. That has never changed. Yeah. So,
well, that explains how the reason the so-called plan is so vacuous, because it doesn't address the root causes of Israeli behavior. Again, and in the second part of the program, I want to talk about the culpability of the West, which I think never should be forgotten. Never again was supposed to be the slogan. Well, that died in Gaza. All right, I'm going to jump in and I'm going to interrupt myself. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the illusion of peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the illusion of peace. Okay, now we're joined by Sarah Lee Whitson in New York. She is the executive director of DAWN, an organization that works to reform U.S. policy in the Middle East. Welcome to the program, Sarah. Reforming American foreign policy in the Middle East, that's a career. It seems to me that American foreign policy has only gotten worse in the Middle East, not better. Obviously, I've been told that you've heard most of the first part of the program. And I asked the good doctor in London, was this plan designed to fail? And so far, it's unanimous on this program. What are the other elements that, you know, considering what you heard, would you add to that? Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, basically, this ceasefire plan, or phase one of the ceasefire plan, is an effort by Israel to return to the pre-October 7 status quo and worse. The most it's agreed to do is to return to earlier restricted aid levels, which themselves were grossly inadequate. It maintains, at least for the time being, and I don't think there will be another phase, an Israeli perimeter around all of Gaza, deep into Gaza, encroaching on Gaza's territory. And it continues to give Israelis full control of all of the entry and exit points into Gaza, including the Rafah border. In this way, basically, Israel and the United States are hoping that as long as the bombs are not raining down, the international community, American voters, voters will look the other way. And I think that the main reason why President Trump forced Netanyahu to make this concession to at least stop the bombing, which is, of course, keeping it from achieving its goals, as your prior speaker said, of emptying Gaza of Palestinians and taking all of the territory for itself, is that the political pressure in the United States was increasing, and the disconnect between what the American public wants and what the American government does in terms of supporting Israel is growing vaster and vaster and vaster. And this, of course, is in addition to Israel's bellicose, relentless warmongering throughout the Middle East, bombing six countries in the region, most recently Qatar. I mean, this is an out-of-control state, a very spoiled, out-of-control state that has gotten used to doing whatever it wants because Uncle Sam, its big sugar daddy, keeps indulging it. And here's what we see. Here's the outcome. The outcome is the whole world now opposes Israel, and the majority of the American public opposes U.S. aid to Israel. It's unsustainable.
Yeah, but popular things don't always get transacted into policy, and you know that as well as I do. Elijah, in Brussels, are we going to see a phase two? Because I read the communique that came out of Egypt. It was one of the most vacuous things. I mean, I'll never get that time back in my life. It was a total waste of time. It seems like phase two is not even possible. Go ahead.
It's extremely difficult to reach phase two. First, because there are around 9 to 10 Israeli hostages, bodies that are still under the debris, almost impossible to be recovered. Yeah. People don't know where they are because the Israeli changed the total topography of Gaza. Even the people who always lived there cannot recognize the street they grew up in. And because of that, there are the Qatari and the Turks in Gaza now trying to help to find these bodies. And because nobody's talking about the around 9 to 10,000 Palestinians under the debris, and the whole world see only the Israeli 28 bodies, of which 9 have been recovered. Therefore, we're going to stagnate on this point one. Now, point two is going to be very difficult because first, Israel doesn't want to withdraw. It's still occupying 53% of Gaza Strip, and the access to food and humanitarian aid and reconstruction is again under the control of the Israelis, and they have not opened the Rafah crossing because they've destroyed completely on the Palestinian side and is still in it because phase two doesn't give them the doesn't force them to pull out. They still stay in a large part of Gaza. So there are so many obscure points that Donald Trump made it in a way that this war continue forever because Benjamin Netanyahu is a saboteur expert.
Well, exactly, Elijah. I mean, we already saw in this calendar year a so-called ceasefire, and it was scrapped, and Trump didn't do anything about it. I want to go back to I want to go back to the doctor in London. And something you said in the first part of the program reminded me of something that Norman Finkelstein has pointed out in the last few news cycles, is that this is not a state policy on the part of Israel when it comes to the occupied territories. It's a national policy. It has consensus within Israel itself. I'm so sick and tired of Ben-Gavir, Smotrich, Netanyahu. No. That's a nice cover. Okay, you know, Bernie Sanders can say that. Maybe some people will believe him. But this is a national project of Israel. Go ahead, Doctor.
Correct. You're absolutely right. And the way that this has been presented, and covered in the press and in many articles is that the problem is actually Netanyahu and these hardline right wingers around him. So it's very convenient because it allows people to continue with this illusion that there is a distinction between a particular Israeli government and the Israeli population. Now, in the last 2 years, what has become very clear is that we're dealing not just with a right-wing government, but we're dealing with a population that supports this government. At least 80 to 90% of them support its policies. So this is a real issue for the future. Now, in one way, you would say that that is not at all promising in terms of the ethnic cleansing agenda of Israel. The population is behind the ethnic cleansing, the expulsion of Palestinians. But there is also, you know, another issue I want to raise. Look, I'm one of these people who for years has talked about a one state, one democratic state future for this country. And I've very much worked on it. I've written at least, well, I've written two books. I've written articles, all promoting this idea. But yet now, after seeing what we're seeing, after seeing that it is the population of Israel is also...
Well, it brings up a really interesting point. Let me throw it back to Sarah. Sarah, you know, in the part of the plan, they talk about the de-radicalization of the Palestinians. And I suppose that includes the West Bank here. But what's really radical is the Israeli population. They need to be de-radicalized.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, as we speak, I am receiving videos from the West Bank, from the family of a young American boy who was viciously beaten and murdered by Israeli settlers. And these fanatic, extremist settlers are back. They're back in their neighborhood. They're back terrorizing them. As we speak, these people are unhinged and out of control. When you couple that with the fact that the vast majority of the Israeli public has continued to support for the past 2 years the genocide in Gaza, concerned only with the fate of the hostages,
yes.
Showing little human compassion and consideration for the starvation and suffering.
Well, but Sarah, we saw that echoed by Trump all the time. We have to get the hostages back. It's that's the first thing that ever came out of his mouth. Obviously, he is not ever uttered and probably never will because he'll feel threatened. But the word genocide here. Elisha, we're rapidly running out of time. You know, I was trained as an academic historian in America. And history does matter. What is going to be the history of this catastrophe? And will people be held account?
Well, first of all, there is a good side of it. People today understand what the Palestinian population went through. And normally, the Israeli count on the lack of memory of people and what happened on the 7th of October highlighted the injustice of the Palestinian people they suffered all this time. But history will always remember the level of criminality the Israelis were allowed to do by receiving the green light from Europe and from the United States on day one, and nobody stopped the genocide that the United Nations defined as such, and the famine made by men that were imposed on 2.5 million Palestinians under the watchful eyes of the whole world. This is why people stood up, because they were angry. They couldn't believe we have lost all our values.
Yep.
They couldn't believe we live in a world that is capable of accepting this kind of murder on television.
Okay, I want to ask a real quick question of Sarah, because she was only in the second part of the program. You know what gave me a little bit of hope, Sarah, is that I saw young men at rallies. I think it was Charlie Kirk's and his people, and they kept asking about the USS Liberty, which was really amazing to me. The young generation has actually heard about the attack on American ship by Israel. That was completely blotted out. It seems to be back. Your thoughts?
Yes, I think it's very true that the young generation is extremely focused on not only Israeli attacks on an American ship that happened decades ago, but the ongoing corruption of the American government, of our elected officials.
And the media, by
Israel's lobbyist AIPAC and a very small coterie of billionaires who spend all of their assets and resources to force our government to support Israel. Just yesterday, we put out a report on 13 Americans who've been killed by Israeli forces, Israeli paramilitary settler forces, as well as Israel Defense Forces, for which not a single person has been held accountable by Israel. They think they can do whatever they want, including murdering Americans. And our government is letting it happen.
Okay, well, that's all the time we have, but I'm going to continue with this issue of accountability as long as it takes, as long as it takes. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in London, New York, and in Brussels. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.